Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White's ready to roll on a Monday morning because he loves Mondays, his favourite day of the week. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. How are you today?
Terrific.
Well, that's good.
How could you not be?
Well, that's exactly right. How could you not be?
Exactly right.
How could you not be?
Fantastic weekend of activities.
An interesting weekend, definitely. You know, I'm going to put it on the table straight away because I feel like I need to. It's almost a cleansing process.
Mm-hmm.
I tipped one winner on the weekend.
I got three, I think. Oh, no, four. Did I get four, Frank?
You got four. You got the three on the Sunday.
I had a Sunday special. Yeah, should have had a multi. Not allowed to, of course, but should have had one.
I got one.
You got one.
Now, admittedly,
one.
I would have changed a few of my tips had I seen the teams.
Now I would have done the same.
So I just want to make that perfectly clear. It's like Dean Lester tipping without seeing the final fields.
Well, do you know that there was an incident on the weekend too?
No.
Our Friday form quaddy, there was a number scratched. So Dino replaced that number and it paid $35 and won.
Well, that's why you have to listen on a Saturday as
that's
well.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm being crueled by the teams, not knowing the teams. I would have if I knew the teams, I would have got two.
You would have picked St Kilda instead of Hawthorn.
I would have tipped St Kilda instead of Hawthorn.
Me too.
But I can't say I would have changed any of my other tips. Anyway.
Right. Now that's a setback one. That's a career. I would imagine that's a career low.
I was being sledged by not only James but Jemima yesterday because Jemima's gone 8-7 in the last 2 weeks to make a significant move in the footy tipping competition.
8-7.
It just shows what a great competition we have this year because we're at round 7 now and a lot of results on the weekend went well and truly against the trend. And against teams that were out of form, they've sort of got back into form. And I think it's terrific at round 7. We really don't know. We can't really formulate anything at the moment.
Well.
Like that anyway.
I'm not surprised, but after one tip, one correct tip out of nine. Adam Romanaskis is a Bombers champion these days, a manager to the Stars. And he is leading our tipping here on the Breakfast Club by the solitary vote tip. Which would have been the St Kilda one had we, you know, squared it up. I would have been square with him. But anyway, he's the winner. Rama, good morning.
Good morning. I thought I had five, but on that, I've got four. I thought I tipped Brisbane rather than Port Adelaide.
No, you tipped Port. I remember that.
I was one out there. Might have to go back to the tape.
I was one out there. I remember that.
I'm getting heckling now from staff members who said they got seven.
That's sort of close your eyes and just press button sort of stuff. That's not any real thought process going into that.
Whitey is talking about, you can't formulate what's happening at the moment, but watching you in our pre-game warm-up.
Yes.
Sort of, you're starting to formulate your form ladder.
Well, the form ladder's been updated.
And I don't know if it's really...
What do you mean?
I don't know if it's really given any indication of what's going to happen.
Well, it's my word, it has. It's the oracle and you know it.
No.
It's an oracle for what is going to happen in the season. Now, it's still relatively early in the season.
Young.
Yeah, relatively young. Not even a third of the way through just yet.
So what, we get up to around sort of 18 and then you go, well, this is what's going to happen.
No, well, about halfway through is when we start to think about investing for our friends. Way one friend over there who really enjoys that part of the proceedings. we get a little bit of support and a bit of feedback.
Have we got any locks?
Well, you know what? Yeah, we do.
When are we redoing our top eight?
No, we're never doing that again. We're never doing that. The redo. We're not talking about it nor retouching it.
I did talk about it a couple of weeks ago that we were going to announce.
Because I do think that's interesting. Sorry, you go.
You're hot.
Because I think the interesting thing is, despite only tipping one on the weekend, there's only one change I'd like to make from my eight from the start of the year, which just shows either I'm stupid, which is probably true. Or that it's just taking a little bit longer maybe to settle down. I'm not sure. I mean, Collingwood would be the only one that I'd like to take out of my eight, and a lot of people wouldn't have had Collingwood in the eight at the start of the year anyway.
That's probably true.
So I'm comfortable with seven of my eight. But it's just, yeah, there's a few teams.
Who comes out?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. And I don't know who I'd necessarily... So from the eight at the moment, I don't know who I'd want to take out, and I don't know who I'd want to put in. But from my eight at the start of the year, I'd take Collingwood out. and put...
Well, I would suggest that's a pretty good
and
idea.
And Sydney's the one that I didn't have in that is in and had a good win on the weekend. Well, but I'm still not certain they're going to stay.
I'd probably need to put Melbourne in.
Yeah.
They're probably... Although...
I'll sneak in.
They have had their third easiest draw, according to the form ladder.
Melbourne?
Yep. So they're sitting... In fact, the top
four... They played Geelong and Richmond.
Yeah.
No, the form ladder has said...
Every year it's got holes in it.
No.
They've played Geelong and Richmond.
They held that 1 year. It was a good 1 year.
They've had the third easiest ladder. Hang on. Who am I talking about? Which team?
Melbourne.
Melbourne. Third easiest. That's what I said.
Well, there was one game on the weekend, if I had my time again, I would have changed, which was the Freo West Coast game.
Well, that's two teams then.
No, just the tip. Because Fremantle hadn't played anyone in the eight until...
Mm. And Fremantle haven't beaten West Coast the last 10 occasions either.
That
was a bit of a setback.
No, I would have had the third easiest, all right? I'm just telling you what it tells me. That's all you need to know at this stage. You can lock in Richmond for top four. That's what you can do. Early doors. You know who's had the hardest draw in footy?
No.
Man, they're a bit stiff. North Melbourne. North Melbourne have played Melbourne, Western Bulldogs, Port Adelaide, and they played Geelong for as well. So it was the top four from last year. I think they've played already. So not a fantastic
start. Much better. Much better yesterday.
Well, there was a moment yesterday, and we'll talk about it with Jim. There was a moment which I think ruined their whole day. So they've had the hardest draw. They're sitting on 18th in the ladder. The Bulldogs have had the easiest draw, and they're sitting second.
I'm looking forward to speaking to you guys about the Bulldogs later.
Port Adelaide have had the third easiest draw, equal third with Melbourne, and they're third. So the top four on the ladder have had the third easiest, equal third easiest, easiest, equal third easiest, and where's fourth? And tenth. So one mid-range sort of draw. That's the top four in the ladder. So there's nothing concrete about the top four just at the minute, according to the form ladder. And that is important information for those playing at home. Very important information. West Coast will be fine. Trust me. The form ladder says so. Brisbane will be fine. Other than that, there's not a lot of locks just at the minute. Geelong will be teetering. They'll be sort of bottom four of the eight. There you go. That's the only update for the form ladder. It's revised after round seven. Boomer, by the way, as we do some housekeeping matters on a Monday morning, claimed his first point in the face-off for the year with Tom Liberatore getting most contested possessions. I think he had it at quarter time.
I think he had 12 at quarter time.
He was over at quarter time, the Friday face-off. Well, not great news for us, but awesome news for Kevin McCarthy, who wins the $100 Ribera's voucher and the Bataki hamper as well. And just to confirm your selection on Friday morning, Rammer, in the game between Brisbane and Port Adelaide up at the Gabba in what turns out to be wet conditions. Mm. Let's have a listen. Well, Brisbane and Port. Rammer, you can go first here at the Gabba.
Brisbane win this by
Port.
Suffering your jocks. Suffer. Now, off the SMS, if you're on the bottom of the ladder, surely you always get the hardest draw. No, not true. Not true, because it's not actually about you. It's about your opposition. So that's important to remember in the form ladder discussion. It's actually got nothing to do with the team that is being referenced. It's who they've played. That's where the form ladder and the real strength of it lies.
Just on that, my tip, Port Adelaide. But on our little footy tipping competition here.
Which is this one?
I tip Brisbane in my tip. So where do we sort of sit?
You went on
we
air.
We sit on what you said on Port air. It's a public situation.
It's a public forum that you've announced.
Fair enough.
You were selecting Port Adelaide. And the fact that you're still trying to weasel out of it.
Yes, correct. Correct.
After 2 days.
Can we change sports a little bit?
Yes, go.
I saw two of the better innings over the weekend in the IPL.
Oh, my God.
Just loving the fact that you're into the IPL.
Yeah, Corin Pollard first. Yeah. That, what are the 88 or 30, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Josh Butler last night, 124 or 55.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Pollard was unbelievable to get them over the line. Two of the better innings.
Well, they're saying
two of the more entertaining innings.
Yeah, they're saying Pollard's particularly was one of the greatest T20 innings of all time because... 80-odd off 30-odd balls is obviously very impressive. The other big news in cricket over the weekend...
David Warner
got sacked as captain of the Sunrisers. He's been captain of the Sunrisers for quite a few years now, but not only was he sacked as captain, he lost his place in the team.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you can't get a game. You can't be captain.
He hasn't been going that bad.
But he's been going slowly.
Slow, yeah.
And he, to be honest, he hasn't been going particularly well. He's been fairly average, vanilla, mediocre sort of numbers. They're not
average,
horrific.
Vanilla, mediocre.
Yeah, but not. He hasn't been horrific, but he's been not scoring a lot of runs and not scoring them at a good rate. So in the IPL, you can only have four internationals.
Yep.
And they wanted to sort of change it up a little bit, and they brought in Mohammad Nabi, who we know obviously here in Melbourne as playing for the Renegades. And, yeah, he lost his place in the team. So that was quite remarkable.
And no mention of the T20 World Cup being in the UAE on standby?
Yeah, so how's the irony about this? It was supposed to be played in Australia, and then obviously it couldn't because of COVID. So they decided that rather than play it in Australia this year, they'd play it in India this year, and Australia can have a go in a couple of years' time. Shouldn't they just play it in Australia this year?
Would have thought that would have been pretty straight.
Pushed everything back.
Although we don't want all those internationals coming here with what they've got.
Maybe.
We're banning planes willy-nilly around here at the moment. I'm not sure we need any more from international guests coming in. Scotty's got a bit to say about that. Speaking of big news across the weekend, now, I was not aware of this until I was watching Channel 7 News last night. What about our man Steve-O? Mark Stevens with his health scare, which this is more a serious matter. A shock bowel cancer diagnosis after having some issues last year in the hub. He got checked out on the back of Adam Hamilton, who we know from the TAB, and Mark Allen, one of our friends as well, who had similar problems with their health. And Steve, on the back of that, got tested and worked out that he had a polyp in his colon and it was cancerous, and had to have the operation to get it all out after it spread. Thankfully, at this stage, he's okay, which is fantastic news, and we send him all of our love and our best because we love Steve-O, even though he's a loose dude. We love him. And we are very, very thankful that he's in the situation he's now as opposed to the alternative, which certainly wouldn't have been very palatable.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock and typical of Steve-O. He kept it all fairly private and sort of went about his business, you know, very select people knew about what was actually going on. It all happened quite quickly, as it does when you get diagnosed. He just sort of disappeared off the face of the earth there for a while.
Well, we spoke about it last week in this off-air. Yeah. What's happened to Body Steve-O?
And
now we know.
Yeah, so he's fine now. That's the key, is that they got it early enough that they're able to get in there. He was in hospital for a couple of weeks, and, you know, it was clearly a big shock to him and his family, the seriousness of it. But he did. I mean, Adam Hamilton's a good friend of ours here, and Adam and Steve-O worked together at the Herald Sun, so they've been close for quite some time. And he did actually sort of heed the advice of Adam when he told his story that, look, something's not quite right here, I've got to get it checked. And he was as shocked as anybody. He actually got the phone call as he was about to do a live cross on air. So he did the cross. And then said, because he kind of said to the doctor, oh, okay, thanks for that. Look, I'll call you back. I'm just going to do a live cross.
Just going to talk about Tom Liberatore's
hamstring. Yeah, that's right. He did the...
I'm halfway in a bin outside the Witten Oval.
He did the cross and rang the doctor back, and it all happened pretty quickly from there. And he didn't even tell work. He told work that he had an issue, but he didn't say exactly what was going on.
No, we're very thankful that he's okay. But it was a bit of a shock last night when we heard that news. Certainly we didn't know anything about it. But good luck to you, Steve-O. And look forward to hearing from you very, very soon. While we're on distressing news from the weekend, of course, the passing of Frank Costa, former Geelong president, has sent shockwaves through that community. He's been ill for about a year. So it's ultimately not a massive surprise, but when you get someone like that who's been so significant in a community, let alone a football club, it's a big blow to that region, I reckon, Rama.
Yeah, really sad. Really sad. He's an enormous impact, obviously, to the Geelong Football Club, but that whole community, as you mentioned down there, and just how humble the man is. You know, you wouldn't know Frank really ever had money because of the way he was. He's a genuine person. He had genuine relationships with people, and you listen to the way a lot of, and we'll speak to Jimmy about it, obviously, a lot of players speak about him. He was a bit of that sort of godfather, grandfather type of person down there. So very sad when you lose people of that quality.
Icon in the region down there, Frank Costa, so I'm sure there'll be plenty of great tributes for him in the next couple of days. And we'll, as you said, we'll talk to Jimmy about him after 7 o'clock when he joins us to go through round 7 of the AFL. But our best and condolences to the Costa family on the passing of Frank. Moving forward, there has been some positive news across the weekend. And John on the road wants to touch on one of those stories amongst a couple of issues. I think he's got the agenda. Good morning, John.
Okay, fellas. Yeah, just Miller, mate. Fantastic. Good to see the Aussie up there. Just want to ask you, boys, is the Grand Prix still going to go ahead down the island? Because I know they called the superbikes off.
Good question.
And another thing, I think you've got to get rid of Ray Chamberlain. I love watching the footy, but I don't want to hear those umpires, mate. And they can't bounce. Play on. That's all I hear. Play on, play on. That was a great game yesterday. I wasn't disappointed with the Bombers. I think the young kids, I think they'll do all right. I'm quite, I've turned it around a bit. I think now I've got to eat a bit of humble pie.
Well, you're right, John.
Yeah, the Ray Chamberlain thing really annoyed me because
which part of Ray's work annoyed you?
The bouncing in the middle. Now he clearly has issues with bouncing. I think he's got a bad back or something like that, which makes it hard for him to do it. So the common sense would be that he doesn't bounce it in the middle. Now I know that there is almost like a configuration depending on who kicks the goal and where people are, which umpire is in which area of the ground when the goal is kicked. But he either throws it up in the middle
or
someone else does it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Ray's the worst umpire in the competition, and it would be a shame if he was forced to not umpire because he can't bounce in the middle. But he shouldn't be bouncing in the middle. Throw it up or get someone else to do it. Because it was having a really significant impact. Both teams were affected by it, so it wasn't as though it was the difference between Carlton winning or losing.
The Blues are way too good, you know.
But he should not be bouncing that ball. That's where common sense needs to come into play.
That makes sense to me.
Yep.
That makes sense to me. It's an easy fix. It's actually a really simple fix.
It's like if he's doing that area of the ground, it's like a rotation as players. So he stands wherever, forward or defensive or whatever, then he just drifts in there and he takes that part of the ground after the bounce.
And it's a bit like Eleni Gluftis that, you know, I think she's improved her bouncing quite considerably.
Well, she covered a lot of kilometres over there.
Yeah, she did. But she shouldn't feel pressured to have to bounce the ball.
She bounced the ball beautifully then the weekend.
No, as I said, she's improved significantly, but she shouldn't feel the pressure that she needs to be able to bounce the ball for her to get a game every week. It should be purely and simply based on
her
decisions she makes around the ground. And there could be a scenario that of the three, there's one really good bouncer and he just does it every time.
Yeah.
As I said, it really annoyed me yesterday.
Well, speaking to your business partner recently, Matty James.
Yes.
Talking about
one of the great bouncers.
Well, yes, but the impact that that's had on his back has been significant. He's still talking to him in all sorts of trouble with back issues.
Well, that's one of the Genesis ideas for the Recovery Lab. Check it out in the recoverylab.com.au. You can do one-stop shop for recovery. He thought he needs just to find a way to get his body back to peak health. And
he was a very good umpire.
Wellness.
Very good umpire.
On the party circuit too, Matthew, back in the old days. John, the feedback coming through, the MotoGP returns to the island for October 22-24 later on this year. That's the situation at the moment, the calendar at the moment. It is subject to final FIM approval. So we need to wait, but at this stage it is still going ahead, the MotoGP. And he mentioned Miller. Jack Miller is who he's referring to in that, who won the Spanish Grand Prix last night in the MotoGP. Aussie Jack Miller, who we've been trying to get on this program, I reckon, for 3 years. And then he finally wins one. I reckon we've got to track him down. We've got to find a way, Frank, to get this man on the program. I'm a lover of Jack Miller. In fact, Ducati had a huge night last night with Jack Miller winning and his teammate Francesco Bagnaia, a young fella, coming in second in the MotoGP. So a big night for Ducati fans and a big weekend for Jack Miller. Aussie Jack Miller took out, I think, his first Grand Prix in 4 years or something. In 5 years it was. So well done to Jack and well done to Ducati. While we're talking motorsport, before we get to a couple of other calls, did you see Scotty McLaughlin's performance on the weekend?
Yeah, quite incredible. So he finished second. It was a New Zealand 1-2.
It was.
So for him to be doing that so early in his IndyCar career is quite extraordinary. It was the first time he's been oval racing.
Left-hand turns all day long.
So there's another match, or another race this morning. So if he wasn't actually out there racing, we'd have him on and be chatting to him today. So
started
15th. Great result.
Started 15th and then finished second by 0.2 of a second against countryman Scotty Dixon, who is idolised through the journey. So it was a big result for New Zealand motorsport, but also certainly for us with our connection to Scotty McLaughlin, the three-time supercar champ. Well done, Scotty. And we'll get more on his work this morning a little bit later on. Sulky's in Tassie. Hello, Sulky.
G'day, Half, Whitey and Rama. How are you, lads?
We're terrific, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, good. By the way, 7 to the Tippin League.
7? Oh, who'd you miss? 7.
Oh, that rat Papley kicking the goal across in one game. who else? I can't remember the other one I missed, but yeah.
Right, no, 7's a pretty good effort. Oh, Collingwood, okay.
Yeah. I want to ask you about Melbourne. I watched their seconds on the TV the other night, and I'm interested in your thoughts. There were 3 guys that I can't see that are in their seconds that shouldn't be in their seniors. That's
still with the Sulky? Go again.
And Wiedemann.
Who were they? We missed the first couple.
Neville Jetta, yep. Harms and Wiedemann. I reckon all 3 should be in their best 20, but they don't seem to be.
Jetta, Harms and Wiedemann.
Yeah, and I think you got a good argument there for those 3. Obviously, Harms coming back from an injury, which he sustained earlier in the year, so no doubt a game or two. But you know, it's a tricky one. When you're winning, it's difficult to change that team week on week. But I think all 3 will play a significant role come the second half of the season. Jetta's the interesting one. I really like him as a player, and I know his teammates absolutely love him for playing as that lockdown small defender. But he was in and out of the team last year. He's been in and out of the team again this year. So he might be the vulnerable one out of those 3, whether he gets that consistent game.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to be changing too much of the formula at the moment. 7 wins from 7 starts for the Demons. Well, I was a bit nervous and a bit jittery yesterday for a period of time against the Kangaroos down there at Hobart.
We'll talk about this after 7, but Tomlinson going down opens the door for somebody to come in and how they restructure because...
Well, McDonald went back yesterday, which means...
Is that permanent? Yeah. Will that be permanent? So, obviously, Tomlinson, the way he was playing, allowed Lever to play on whoever basically he wanted. Mm. So they don't want to take Lever back to play on a key position player, key forward. They'll definitely bring a like for like in there.
Thank you, Sulky. Nice to have you with us. 7 out of 9 is a good effort. Well done to you, that rat, Papley.
Jeez, that was an amazing game Saturday
that
night.
Rat, Papley. That's a highlight for the week already, for Monday morning.
I must admit, I enjoy the umpires boss, Dan Richardson, getting on the front foot. Next day, same. Yep, made a mistake. Should have been a mark. Holding the ball. No, that was the right decision. I like it. It's put to bed. It's put to rest.
We'll talk about it.
Now, I know that hurts a lot of Geelong's people's hearts, that it should have been a mark, but...
Well, they were 32 points up. They should have been fine.
Yes. That's right. Correct.
David and Glenroy. Hello, David.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Good, thank you.
I've been an Essendon supporter for 65 years, and there were 3 things that really worried me about football yesterday.
What were they?
The first one was Nathan Redmond not attacking the ball, staging for free kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Ridley grabbing the jumper 3 times that cost Essendon 3 goals.
Correct.
Yep.
And the league should step in and just stop Ray Chamberlain bouncing the ball. Mm. It is absolutely a disgrace. Essendon were more disadvantaged, I believe, because they had a ruckman playing his first game.
Yep.
And he's not accustomed to the ball not being bounced properly.
Well, we don't know that necessarily. I mean, I'm not sure what the bounce is like in the VFL, Rama, from an umpire perspective. But it certainly was an issue that's come up a couple of times already, that one, David, this morning. The holding of Big Harry a couple of times wasn't fantastic.
No.
But that, you know, that's pressure. That's what Harry does.
Well, that's playing undersized.
That's pressure. But that's also a lack of Essendon pressure through the midfield that allowed the ball to come down as easily and quickly as it did.
Beaten by the dominant team is what happened there. It's pretty straightforward.
They played a turnover game, Carlton, yesterday. Essendon just gave the ball back to them so often, and they paid for it on the scoreboard.
Thank you, David. Your call. Craig and Mount Martha, before we get to a break. Hello, Craig.
Good morning, boys. How are we all this morning?
We are well. How are you?
Fantastic. Fine, thank you. I'm just with the way the AFL football's being played nowadays, or this year in particular, I'm interested in your thoughts along the lines of who you would rate as the best key defender at the moment, the way Wiedering's playing and the way Lever's playing and these sort of blokes.
I'll tell you who I'd pick number one. I've seen him live a couple of times this year. It might skew my judgment a touch. I would, as a key defender, I would pick Dougal Howard every day of the week. every day of the week to play one-on-one, to roll off. He wins one-on-one matchups unbelievably. I think he's fantastic, Dougal Howard. I think he's the best key defender in the competition. There you go.
I really like what Stephen May is doing at the moment for Melbourne.
Yep.
The way he's playing the game.
Start there.
You know, really, really gets out Mark. It's hard to deny Jacob Wiedering at the moment, the number one draft pick. He looks every bit of that now that he's obviously well into his career, but he was unlucky not to be All-Australian last year. The All-Australian centre-half-back is now playing forward and getting three or four possessions a game at the moment for Collingwood, which I still scratch my head at, but probably those two are the ones, Wiedering and Stephen May.
Got someone for our caller there, Craig. Adam? What?
No, I agree with all of those. I think Lever, May, Howard, Wiedering, Allaire would be the
five.
I'd put it sort of put
but
up.
Yeah, I don't think you can classify Lever now as a key defender. I think he's your hybrid.
He'd be part of your three tall defenders.
Yeah. They've got that right now with Lever. When he first came to Melbourne, Goody wanted to play him as a key defender on a key forward, and that clearly wasn't going to work longer term, and I think the results are showing now.
Harris Andrews, hard to leave him out as well, and he again played extremely well on the weekend.
Quite lucky with key defenders at the moment in football. There's some, like McGovern, obviously, is a star over at West Coast as well. Probably not going as well as he has in the past, but he's still a star.
What's also happened is they've adapted to the change of key forwards anchoring a bit deeper, the ball coming in. I mean, I don't think the ball's coming in as quickly as it was three or four weeks ago. But it's still a different game for them.
What caught your eye, Jim, in round 7 of the AFL?
Lots caught my eye, but a player who caught my eye, and I heard you have the discussion of key defenders, Charlie Ballard is one I think you've left out a little bit because Gold Coast, as we like to say, are off-Broadway.
Yes.
He's been fantastic. I thought his game down back for Gold Coast, they're actually starting to get a fair bit of depth in their back line. Through injuries, you throw in Farrah as well. Another athletic one. Bowes is a high possession winning half back.
30
again. He racks up the footy, so they're actually starting to get a fair bit of depth from their back line. Gold Coast. Well, what else caught your eye? It's hard not to catch your eye. The Geelong Sydney game.
Well, let's start there, Jim. Let's start there because from my recollection, Geelong owned that game, Jim, and then all of a sudden the world changed. What happened in that moment that the world changed for the Cats on Saturday night?
Marks.
Speak to me. What does that mean?
Well, Geelong took 42 marks in the first quarter and they dominated the game.
42 marks in a quarter. How many of those were uncontested, you know? Would have been a fair chunk of that.
Pretty 30, much 40.
40-ish, you'd reckon?
Yep. And then how many do you think they finished with at the end of the game?
Well, Sydney shut it down, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's say, what's another 50? 90.
Close. 89.
89.
So 47 for the remaining three quarters. So you close down time and space, and you actually then allow yourself to get back into the contest because it actually is forced, the ball's being forced to kick to a contest. And you start to win the territory game, and you start to squeeze the field, which allows you to get away with only having 39 inside forward 50s and getting a win.
For the Swans, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that being said, and that makes perfect sense.
Thanks.
How does Geelong walk away with that from that game? What are they thinking? Because that's a game they shouldn't have lost from that position of strength and the amount of control they had in the last quarter where they had the ball pretty much inside their 50 for large portions of it and they couldn't lock the game away.
Yeah, this is the really difficult thing, and we've got a long-time experienced coach at all levels here, Daniel Harford, and I'm not being a smarty pants here, but this is the art of coaching and the coaching team. So if you're Chris Scott and Scarlett and Enright and all the other coaches there, it's really difficult to weigh up how much do you go hard or you pat on the back, because you'd go back and you go, well, I'm going to go down the playing group and we've pretty much won 8 or 9 of our KPIs or whatever our areas, but we've lost. Now, did we lose just on moments and skill execution? Yeah. So it's really difficult because as much as you hammer them, skill execution, like set shots, I just need my forwards to go take more set shots. So what I'm trying to say, the question is probably better for Harf, who's been in more situations as a coach after these games, where you go, yeah, I'm frustrated we lost. We had our it's one we lost. I know the Swans won, but we'd lost it.
Yep. So I think that's fair on this occasion. Yeah, Swans got back into it. I mean, they stopped. Yeah. They found a way to get back in.
I'm not discrediting the Swans.
Yeah. But I think the amount of ball they had, 26 more inside 50s, a lot of those in the last term, they needed to be aware of the way that Sydney defend and have defended over recent years. Now, this year, it's been a bit more streamlined play through flow, but when you've got a team who's dominating territory like Geelong did, in that, particularly in the last quarter, Sydney have defended for years in their back 50.
Yeah.
And it just had numbers back, and then they'll surge forward and kick a goal. That's the way they've scored for years. So you need to be... Clearly, they would have been aware of that, the Cats hierarchy. But trying to having a plan to get through it seemingly wasn't at the top of the agenda during the week, because they didn't look anywhere near it, Jim, on Saturday night.
So just to highlight that point, Waddy, we won the ball. I'm saying Geelong. I'm being the coach. We won the ball. We've had 80 more disposals, which 70 of them were more effective. So we've had 70 more effective disposals. Contested possession, we've absolutely walloped the Swans, 151 to 118, uncontested. So we went inside and outside. We took marks early in the game. Then they closed us down. We won clearances, tackles. So you can't say, oh, they out-tackled us. We've won that. We won tackles inside forward 50. As we mentioned, we won inside forward 50s. We were sort of efficient 43% of the time we scored, but we just didn't convert. It just comes...
Yeah, I mean, because there's two things. Hawkins missed those goals late. He had the chance to kill the game. But it was the fact they were so far in front. It can't just be Hawkins missing that's cost them. How they allowed Sydney to get back into the game. I mean, credit's got to be given to the Swans as well for finding a way, a young team, to get back. Because it looked like it was...
It's been
unravelling for Sydney now for a few weeks.
When you're dominating the game the way Geelong were, all those statistical categories that you talk about... You tend to push up the ground a little bit further into your forward half of the ground. Geelong, watching them over many, many years, they've always been good at sitting back. They defend similar to Sydney. They're able to, you know, absorb a lot of inside 50. But in that last quarter particularly, Sydney sweated on the turnover and waited and waited and waited and waited and then just went and bang. And it was like you caught Geelong in shock. It's like, oh, how'd they get through because of the domination of ball that Geelong had. So you look at the Papley goal at the end, there was space everywhere for him to work through. Yeah, okay, it was a terrific goal, but usually Geelong would swarm that and he doesn't get through and score. But it was basically a one-on-one matchup.
Yeah, and defending the middle part of the ground, as Rammer's touching on, off turnover. So if you look at the shot chart where Sydney got their goals, it's just this absolute cluster between the... Yeah, the goals, the point post to point post, and only 20 metres out. And that puts opposition under the pump. So what it's saying is Sydney are able to get to that launch zone easily. So 70 metres out from goal, 70 metres out from goal, you tend to hit that spot a lot easier. And through the middle, which then put Geelong's backs under a huge amount of pressure. So Geelong weren't able to, as Rami was touching on, slowly march up the ground, what they love to do, robotic-like. You know, get up the ground, and you see Stewart and Blitzars sort of having their possessions around near the logos.
I'm mindful that there's other games I want to talk about, but I just want the three of your view on the mark that wasn't paid for 15. Mm. And rather than criticise the umpire, because I think that is such a difficult rule to officiate, and what the umpire tried to do is he tried to call it early to give everyone as much warning as possible, I'm not going to pay the mark. But
that's the issue right there. He went too early.
Yes, but... You also got to give him credit for trying to communicate with the players.
As soon as that ball came off the boot, he's yelling, play on, play on, play on. But clearly the ball travelled the required distance.
But what I want to know is there a solution to this? Because an umpire, judging how far 15 metres is, it's not an easy process.
Well, what's your solution?
Do you want to have
no, I don't know what the solution is, so I'm asking you. Got a solution? Definitely not.
Don't go to that guy.
I need to ban the bunker, full stop.
Every kick we
have. It's going to happen. That's human error.
But to say, oh, well, we've got to push it out to 20 metres, that's going to make it harder for the umpire to determine 20 metres.
Well, seemingly, I'm not sure if it was after... Well, people I spoke to yesterday said there was a lot of... seemingly a lot of emphasis on the short, on the 15-metre kick being 15 metres on Saturday night. And then yesterday I was watching the game...
The Melbourne-North Melbourne game
was highlighted again. Yeah. So they were trying to make sure that 15 is now 15, not 7.5.
Yes.
Which has been paid for way too long.
Yes.
And I'm all for them making it further than shorter if they're going to get it wrong. Get it wrong further. That's fine. Keep call the play on.
This will sound strange, but in the Collingwood Gold Coast game, there was a lot of short passes that just were 7 or 8 metres.
Yeah, see, that's garbage.
So what I'm wondering here is, did then Dan Richardson get on the phone and say that night to the umpires,
the secret memo back,
watch for this in these two night games, because they were obviously significant games. I don't know.
Yeah, I think
I'll call Dan this week and ask him.
I think in the heat of a very close finish with a lot of players around the ball, I think instinctively even the umpires going, I'm just going to
let it go.
Whether it be a free kick or whether it be a, because the other thing too is, had Jeremy Cameron been paid the mark, he would have kicked the ball after the siren.
He kicks that goal.
He would have.
No, he doesn't.
I don't know about that.
But he would. He left foot. But you can't come off your arc because you can kick it after the siren.
You can.
He was right on the goal line.
Snap that ball.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
You can
take your foot off your line.
No, you've got to make the angle worse.
Go boundary side.
And then as soon as you hit your line, that's where you snap it.
But I'll help you out on this one. I'll jump over this side of the fence. Is you actually? He wouldn't have had much space because the fence is so tight.
He kicks it.
Just 2 or 3 steps, he'd be fine.
Yeah, bang.
I don't think he does.
Practice.
Who knows?
Jeremy Cameron, and have a shot for us.
Who knows? It was controversial.
The mark again.
Yeah,
be fatigued right at the end of the game and then show us.
Yeah. The eye test suggested it travelled the required distance. They've come out and said it had since, but I can understand why. The mindset of the umpire was, unless it's that really clear cut, I'm not paying anything.
That's right. So let's just, it's like with the robot and one in the end. Now, a second later, he's probably holding the ball, but it's like, you can understand why the umpire
I'm okay with that one.
I'm more than okay with that one.
Yeah. Anyway. It was the right
that
call.
That was, I think, when that was, it was a throwing, wasn't it? It was, there was 5 seconds remaining on the clock. So ball comes in. It's probably, Selwood holds him for what, 2 or 3 seconds, maybe, Jim?
Yeah, lucky him. Could have got him high, too.
Yeah.
Now, you were at Carlton yesterday.
I was.
Carlton Essendon. What did you like?
About Carlton or Essendon?
Carlton first.
Carlton absolutely punished Essendon off the turnover. 84 points off turnover.
Look,
I think that was just a side who's a little bit much more mature across the entire ground. Now, I know Essendon's got some mature players there, but that a real sense of maturity about it, going down 21 points there at one stage, held their nerve. Adam Saad, I think a lot of Blues supporters went, lucky he was on our side. They kept booing him all day, but he was still brave. That rebound off halfback, midfield turnovers were important. They weren't waiting all the way to their back 50 to get the turnovers, so they had a lot of scores from midfield turnovers. Still need to clean up their stoppage work. Essendon kicked 4 goals from centre bounces and kicked majority of their score from stoppages. Yep. Which with a
they
young
kicking him in general play because they're turning it over.
Yeah, with a young ruckman too on debut. That
Brian,
that was pretty pretty impressive. So, for Carlton, I think they were a side that's just a couple of steps ahead of Essendon as far as their maturity, and they punished them for it.
You're very bullish half about the Blues, or more so than others in this studio.
More so than others.
I'm bullish.
What's been impressive about Carlton is that the two games where they've been under enormous pressure to kind of salvage their season was the game up at Gold Coast against the Suns, which they won.
Yep.
When things looked like they were starting to unravel. And then again yesterday, based on the fact they've got Melbourne and the Bulldogs in the next 2 weeks, this is one they really needed to win.
Correct.
They're 21 points down and they find a way. So that has to be a positive for their mental constitution, for want of a better term, about their ability to hold up under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, they get a bit of confidence out of that. I mean, one of the challenges is, from a Carlton perspective, is being able to stop transition turnovers against them.
Yes.
We've talked about that a little bit in the last while, and that's why Essendon were able to score so heavily in the end yesterday. But I think they're a team that play pretty freely. And that's a positive and a negative, because when they do get opened up the other way, teams score against them. But when they get things on their terms, they're able to hit the scoreboard. What, they kicked 9 goals yesterday or something?
Yeah.
It's a big score, because they're pretty powerful in that area of the ground. Big Harry Mackay, I know he started slightly, but it finished strongly after a bit of gastro, David Teague told us yesterday in the post-match. They're a team that plays freely. They play with the belief that they are a good team. That's watching them play, that's what you think.
They want to actually move the ball.
Yeah, they want to be a good team and move the ball freely. The challenge of that is what happens when they don't keep possession. Yeah. That's the biggest issue, I reckon, for the Blues. But they play like they're going to be a good team. So to have that confidence when you're 21 points down in a game that really does matter, I think is a very positive thing.
I agree with that.
It was both sides in the first half in particular who, you know, doing the forward scouting, knew the opposition were very vulnerable to being scored off turnover. So that's why we saw this huge amount of pace and perfect conditions that as soon as the ball was turned over, it was go fast.
Yep.
And that's why there were some scrappy ones, which then they got hurt on turnover. So it was like if you're putting up on the board for Essendon and going, turn it over, go fast, because Carlton don't defensively transition. And it looked like that in the first half. But Carlton would have almost had the same message on their board against Essendon. We can get them on transition because they're going to try and go fast, but they're not good once the turnover happens.
I reckon one of the most frustrating terms in football is scoreboard pressure. I hate that term. But Carlton genuinely put scoreboard pressure on the opposition because they'll want to keep scoring. So you've got to score against them. If you don't score, you're in trouble because Carlton will score. And that's what they did yesterday again. They just kept making Essendon honest by putting score on the board. And when the Bombers started to turn the ball over, they started to get further and further behind.
Yeah. Where Essendon struggled yesterday is that key defensive post. Obviously using Laverty and Ridley as those key defenders. Stewart, he was okay. But they need to shore up that position. Now, obviously, that
did
would
you lose faith in Essendon after yesterday's performance?
Oh, hang on, here we go.
More propaganda.
It's like the Jack in the Box winding it up, isn't it?
It's an easy review. It's an easy review for Ben.
Come on, this is disrespectful. We're talking about Essendon here.
Who you got next week? Because we're ready to see you two jump
out. You guys, I think.
All of you.
All of you.
GWS.
It's an easy review. They failed miserably with their ball movement. They turned the ball over in really critical positions. So let's clean that up during the week. So, but they're finding players. You look at Jones yesterday. He looked really good. Brian that comes in as a ruckman.
Perkins showed something yesterday.
Yeah, if when you lose as a developing team, you still want to find something out of the game. They found some more.
All right, straw poll. Daniel, whose list would you prefer, Essendon's or Carlton's, long term?
What's long term?
Next 5 years.
It's not long term, it's medium term.
Is it? Yeah. I would have said medium term, 3 years.
So in 5 years' time,
next 5 years, which list would you prefer, Essendon's or Carlton's?
Probably Carlton.
Adam Ramanaskis?
Formal.
I think Carlton will be there before Essendon. I think if you're saying 7-8 years, I'd take Essendon.
Yeah.
James Buttell.
Well, I'm similar to Rama here because we actually have some knowns about a couple of their Carlton's young list. We know Wiedering is a star centre back. We know
Sam Walsh is one of the top echelon midfielders now.
And big Harold Mackay. Like we know what they are. Whereas Essendon, they're top end draft picks, but we know all sides have top end draft picks. There's just a few. Oh, what's it going to map out to with Essendon?
The one unknown for Carlton is how Harry Mackay and Charlie Curnow work. That's the big unknown. That just changes.
Just want to see Charlie.
Yes.
Just to some stage. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what could potentially take Carlton from where they are, right in the ruck in the middle at the moment, to Deconing in the ruck as
Martin,
well.
Martin Fisher.
There's more knowns at Carlton than Essendon.
What's happened with Sam Walsh is he's gone from being one of the best young players in the competition to one of the best players in the competition in the last 6 weeks.
He's gone from playing on a wing predominantly now to playing more as a hybrid mid.
I love that. His ability, his awareness in traffic and his ability to change direction under enormous pressure. He did a couple of times and got a goal out of it, nearly got a second one late in the game. My goodness, to see that happening at that speed and be able to adjust on the fly is just an extraordinary talent.
It takes courage to run in football. We see courage. You know, you look at Nathan Murray, the mark that he took for Collingwood. That's unbelievable courage, bravery. But Walsh's courage to run and run and run and just overwhelm his direct opponent is enormous.
We always knew him as a nice player, but his ability now, with his strength in the contest, to be able to get a kick away or to be able to break a tackle, to be able to get a handball in congestion to a teammate, that's what I think seeing him go to the next level.
Well, he's now impacting games. Like, as you mentioned, like coming in, he found his feet at the wing, and then obviously inside mid, now it's push forward, inside forward, 50, score involvement, scoreboard impact, scoreboard pressure, that sort of stuff. But when you sit there live, he's like a Kelpie.
Yeah.
You can't wear him out. It's like you've taken the brand new Kelpie out and you've run it for 10Ks. He gets home and tears your shoes apart. Yeah. He wants more.
He's a Kelpie, no doubt about that. He's terrific. He really has evolved into a star of the competition, spot on, Whitey, not just a young player. Love Cunningham through the middle of the ground, too. I like that magnet beam.
Why does he play more?
Well, I think you'll see him more.
I didn't think he had that in him.
He doesn't play more because he's still a little bit inconsistent. Yeah. You'll see a bit more of him after that,
I reckon. He was really good yesterday. Zach Williams, halfback flank. Let him play in the middle. Happy day. Giants went to Adelaide on the weekend to take on the Crows at the Adelaide Oval, and they walked away with 67-point victors over the Crows. One of the reasons was the performance of Tim Taranto. Ended up with 35, leading all comers in the game. He's a star, he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, boys. How you going?
We are well, thank you, mate. Nice to have you with us. A good afternoon for the Giants on many fronts. Certainly your afternoon was terrific, but great to see Lachie Whitfield back in, and Jesse Hogan kicking four snags was a highlight as well. How did you see it all unfold on the weekend?
Yeah, it was unreal. Pretty good performance by us. We played pretty much exactly how we wanted to. As you said, awesome to have Witters back, and Hogs to kick four in his debut and play really well was good.
There was a lot of conversation about your footy club a month ago about where it was at, so to speak, and whether not the challenge of getting back to the top eight and hopefully to a top four position was going to be too much. Are you seeing all the right signs now to suggest that things are back on track?
Yeah, I don't think they really ever were off track, to be honest. I know, some of the results haven't been amazing, but I think we've been building, I guess, with a young group and playing a good brand of footy most of the time, so... I think we're pretty pleased with how we're going. Obviously, we'd like some more wins, but you can't have it all. So we're going all right. The way we're playing, we're pretty happy with. So as long as we keep improving, I think we'll be fine.
So, Tim, has anything changed from that slow start?
Not really. I guess the way we want to play is in the same. Just can we deliver it over four quarters and do it consistently? So I guess the messaging and the way we want to play hasn't really changed, whether we can deliver it on the weekend. But yeah, as I said, we did that on Saturday afternoon, which was pleasing.
So going over to that game, it was a bit of a sort of flip of the coin sort of game based on what Adelaide's done this year and yourselves, and you've absolutely pulverised them. Did you feel that performance was in that team? The confidence level's really high when you're turning up to a game like that, that's you're going to have a strong win?
Yes. Every game we go into, we're very confident. The way he wanted to, and he didn't play well but lose. I guess we played well and the result came through, which was nice.
You belted them around the ball, but it's a little bit different now for you guys because, it used to be, we're so used to seeing Cornelio, Cal Ward, and those types. Now it's obviously yourself, Tim. It's Jacob Hopper. It's a bit of a different midfield mix. Has that taken a period to get used to know how to play together?
Yeah, I guess so. It takes time learning how to play with different boys, and we've got Tom Green in there as well, and Brent Daniels is having a run around in there as well. So it takes time, and we're not going to always get it right. But we're probably gelling a little bit better than we did at the start of the year, and I think we'll keep getting better as a group, which is good.
Jim here. It's been noticeable the last few weeks. It's not only your stuff around the contest, as Rama touched on, but you all seem to be playing well in your secondary role. Of course, Josh Kelly going to half forward, you having to push forward, different guys out at the wing or half back. Do you feel like the secondary role for all those midfield types is starting to really improve?
Yeah, for sure. I think we spoke about it maybe a month ago that we need to really start nailing our secondary roles and having an influence when we are out of position, I guess. So everyone's taking it in their stride at the moment when they have to go out to a wing or half forward or whatever it is, and it's helping the team. So it's been really, really pleasing for the group.
We expect to be performing better, and we should. That expectation should be there from our supporters and for the people that love the club. They definitely want to be winning more, so they're hurting. But I think there is an unrealistic expectation clearly there's a heavy focus on the club itself because, geez, we've given you a few storylines and you've run with them. So there's no avoiding that for us, but that's been the same for this place since day dot.
Nathan Buckley post-game after their loss to the Gold Coast Suns Saturday at the MCG. It was a
24-point margin, 12-7 to 7-13, inaccurate kicking for the Magpies, but they never really looked like they were in it, did they, Jim? Rammer, you were there.
We were.
Watching it all unfold. What happened? What happened to the Pies?
I know Nathan Buckley's talked about the storylines and there's a focus on expectation, but that wasn't my disappointment with the Pies on the weekend.
What was it,
Jim? I almost gave a parent talk then. Okay, yeah. I'm not angry, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Because clearly
they gave up 146.
Yeah, and this is where I'm getting to, Rammer. I think that is not only it's a coaching, it's a preparation and a players thing. I think it's all of you.
All of you.
Because your forward scouting, Gold Coast are ranked 18th for long kicks, and they have been since they've come into the competition. They love to kick short and they love to stretch the ground. And when I'm talking about stretching the ground is, you win the ball back on your half-back flank, if you're the Gold Coast Suns. Stretching the ground is getting all your mids and your defenders to go wide, like spread across the ground. And you're making Collingwood make the decision. Do you go with them? If they go with you, you try and hit the one up the middle. Mm-hmm. If they don't, Gold Coast love to go around you with speed and kicking ability. But they don't kick the ball long, and they don't kick the ball long down the line. So when I'm seeing the first 5 minutes, Gold Coast just rack up mark after mark with the bridge kick or that little 20-metre kick that allows you to get out the opposite side of the ground easily, uncontested. I'm going, surely after 5 minutes you recognise it, or at quarter time you recognise it. And they had 46 marks in the first quarter alone. And at not one stage did you go, let's make them do something that they don't want to do. Or until Gold Coast show us, Show me your kick long down the line. Until you show me, I'm not going to defend it. So the message should have been, all mids, get up and defend everything from 20 to 30 metres. Like, cut it out. Don't even give the leg rope. Like, cut it out.
They were 20 metres behind their direct
opponents. They were 20 metres directly behind. And then you had forwards still sitting back inside forward 50 going, geez, I hope we get on the rebound. You need to be the ones who get up laterally. So if you don't have it, come just block up the corridor, at worst. But all I'm saying is, Gold Coast would win the ball back in a slow turnover, like really slow, like a free kick or a mark and the guy's falling down the ground. And I'm saying, Ruckman and Mitch just slowly put their head down, jog long down the line to 50 metres. Oh, geez, they're going to kick it long down the line and we're going to have a contest. Gold Coast have never played that way.
No. So what's going wrong, Jimmy?
Oh, I think I just described
it. No, I understand that, but what? How is this happening? What? It's not so much who's to blame, but how can we have a team that was so hard to play against? They battled to score, but they're always so hard to play against. How has it got to this, Jimmy? Or Rammer?
I think they're lacking effort at the moment. I hate to say that, because all players try when they go out there. But at times on Saturday afternoon, particularly through the arcs, so the middle of the ground.
But it's not effort, it's confidence, isn't it? Well, doesn't confidence lead to
performance? No.
You gave up 146 marks, Daniel.
Well, so, I understand that, Jim.
So I'm talking, Brandon Ellis takes 16 marks all through the middle of the ground. Then Sam Collins, a defender, 12 marks. Corbett, a key forward, 11 marks. Well, you're not even a key forward. Like it's effort. It's actually a want to get to your opponent. Now, if you think you're going well and you're losing games, you're kidding yourself. There's a point in a game when you know your direct opponent is going better than you. You know that.
Yeah.
Okay? So then that's then got to be the switch to go, okay, I've got to shut him down now for the next period of time. Not worry about system and this and where I've got to stand and what grass I'm. There were so many Collingwood players through the middle of the ground that simply guarded grass. Hugh Greenwood, through the middle of the ground, beat Collingwood up at the contest.
Didn't he?
Beat him up.
Statue.
He was awesome.
He just beat him up. So, it's effort. So it's simple effort.
So, Jimmy, are they broken?
Clearly looks like it at the moment. But I get they're playing the young kids and things like that, but it can actually be simplified for them. As Rammer's saying, don't muddle them up with, this is
you
where
you
stand.
You need to kick it there. You need to just playing your direct opponent. Yeah.
Win the contest. If you can't win the contest, make it very difficult for your direct opponent. If we're not moving the ball and you're not involved in the attacking chain, start defending. Like, block the fat side of the ground, get up. Cut out the releases and give people a chance.
Do we have enough of a sample size now with Darcy Moore playing forward?
Oh, seriously.
Seriously, people put their hand up who are on the bandwagon of playing forward like they're the expert. Rammer and I, we're going to put our arm around each other. Because we were always, he's not a forward. And I'm not one saying that. I was always from the start because he hasn't shown enough leading patterns in forward craft to be a forward.
He's one of the best key defenders in the competition.
Because he's a player who likes the game in front of him. and he runs and launches at the footy. And when
reads
you're playing
it better than anyone,
yeah, because you can just keep the game in front of you. There's my direct opponent. Game in front of you. Forwards a completely different craft.
Jeremy Howe's not there.
No, that's, but it's a knock-on effect. So Jeremy Howe's not there. Jordan Roughead, then, when he's with Darcy Moore and or Jeremy Howe, he looks like a good, accomplished defender. On Saturday, without both of them there, he looked all at sea.
Gold Coast key forwards, but including Corbett and that kick six.
It is spectacular, this fall, from where they were to where they are now. Because after 10 minutes on Saturday, you knew that they weren't going to win.
Well, you knew they were just flat.
That's right. They looked they looked tired. Yeah. They looked flat. They looked...
The only player that looked anything for Collingwood was Mychek.
Yeah.
He was the only player that you thought, yep, okay.
That was the first time I saw Collingwood where you think, oh, gosh, they're shot.
They look shot to me on the weekend.
But
they want to get back into one piece because the Kangaroos are coming.
Roll your sleeves up and start to apply pressure to the opposition.
If North Melbourne brings the energy that they brought yesterday, I thought they were fantastic, the Kangaroos.
I want to talk about the Kangaroos after eight because I think they do deserve some discussion.
Yeah. They Collingwood are in for a real battle on the weekend.
They were poor. Gold Coast, probably underselling their effort a bit. First time the MCG for a lot of those guys. Yeah. Never get to play there. It's a really strong win.
They did the
win.
Tour after it.
Sports business.
Walk back to their hotel.
Very good, Stuart. You should be very pleased with these performances, well, these players' performance on the weekend. But, the Pies look almost broken to me, Whitey. I'm with you on that. Luke Parker is a champ from the Sydney Swans, and he would have been tickled pink with the performance of his boys on Saturday night to get over the line against the Cats by a couple of sneaky points in the end. Luke, good morning.
Hey, boys. How are you going?
We are well. Thank you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. It got a bit tight there, Luke. It got very tight late. Were you? You're amongst that, and you've been doing that for years, you Sydney Swans boys. You know how to live those moments. Is that experience helpful in those moments?
I think it's something that we've worked on. I think we've had probably two or three games this year where it's come down to the last couple of minutes. And look, last year it was probably a weakness of ours, and we really wanted to focus on those moments and not shying away, I guess, to just try save the game, but take the game away from them. So I think it was really great by the young boys to stand up in the last quarter. They were the ones who kicked a few goals and really stuck their chest out and didn't back down. So it was nice to get away with a win.
Luke, Jimmy Bartel here. You mentioned the young boys. It's good for them, those teaching moments. You had a stoppage goal against the Giants, which was a win, and then for the Giants. But the Cats, a couple of stoppages late. Was it important for them to see it working well and the results from it?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that came out of the Giants game was the last 2 minutes we got completely wrong and probably went into our shells a little bit. And it was great once we, even before Paps kicked his goal, the mindset we're in, and once Paps put us back in front, and the mindset flipped to save the game, and those stoppages were really crucial to continue to just hold the ball up. It's a pretty high-pressure situation, so to not give away a free kick was some a really good outcome as well.
Luke, when a team is dominating you like they were with Geelong, statistically, obviously possession, contested possession, et cetera, what are your cues that you're looking for to still try to take the game on?
I think, we looked at half time and, well, probably after the first quarter, we were down contested ball by about 30. So that was a big indicator for how we're going. But I think the second quarter, it was more the boys didn't shy away from the scoreboard and just slowly pegging away at it. And I think it was more our ball movement were a bit kamikaze the first half, and I think we're able to just control it a little bit more, make them defend us, not the other way around, and slowly just win a few contests and win a few big moments. And that's what the boys did. They were able to stand up. And look, I'd have to say Geelong probably could have put us to the sword a little bit with their kicking, so they probably let us off the hook a little bit. But there's also a fair few moments where we were able to change the momentum of the game.
Are you sitting back and sweating on turnover? Like, it looked like your numbers in defence, you just clogged them up completely. So is that a message that comes from the coach's box, or you as a midfield group say, okay, we just need to sit back a little bit more defensive through this game and counter attack?
Oh, yeah, I think, look, our defence has stood up for years, and we know that kickstarts our offence, and basically that's how the system works. And we knew if we got back to controlling the game and really standing up in that defence, they had to defend for a long time this week. I think that was about 65 inside 50, so we didn't make it easy for the defenders, but hopefully our wingmen and mids were able to get back and help out a little bit to kickstart that offence.
Luke, I remember in the off-season there was a bit of speculation about that there were clubs sniffing around you to come back to Melbourne to play, and you were categoric in saying, why would I want to leave this football club with all these good young kids that we've got? The exciting future is ahead of us. So now when you look at it after seven games of this season, are you ahead of schedule? Did you expect it to be happening so quickly?
I think we had a lot of belief in the club. I think most teams probably go into a season thinking that, and thinking that it's their year, that they've got their confidence up, they've done the work, and it does take a while until you put the scores on the board. And we did have the confidence and the belief, but it's great to see that the boys really taking that into the season and standing up in big moments. And I think we've beaten, what, three or four of the teams that were last year's top four, and the boys are really taking a heap of confidence from that.
Because it was interesting, I thought, on Saturday night particularly, that when the game was there to be won, it didn't have to be you or Josh Kennedy getting it done. You guys had a truckload of possession the week before, but in the heat of the battle, we always sort of felt like it had to be either you or Josh to get it done, to get you over the line, but it wasn't the case on Saturday night, and it hasn't been the case a couple of times this year. That must give you a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it does, and I think no good team's going to win a premiership or be right up there with just a couple players to win them a game, and I think that's what's working really well, is we've got some young guys coming through. Us older boys are still trying to stand up and lead the way, and each week different guys will get their moment, and that's what it's been the whole year. And look, hopefully it continues to be a successful outcome.
There's growth with our ball use today. I'll look at it from the way we played as much as end. The result's great and we want that, and the win's really good. And our fans, that's what they want, and we've got to keep winning. We go out on the oval and we expect to win, and we've got a couple of games coming up where we think our best is good enough to win, and we'll go out there to do that.
David Teague, coach of the Blues, after their win yesterday against the Bombers. 16 points the margin, too good in the end. It was a fine performance, a high-scoring affair. 230 points kicked for the afternoon at the G. Ed Curnow didn't kick any. He kicked one of those. He did kick six of those points, in fact. Their 26 disposals was very, very good. In fact, now I remember it. It was a bloody important goal. Ed, good morning.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Cheers, guys.
It was a nice goal at a pretty important stage of the game when it went through the big sticks. You must be pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, I just chucked it on the boat. I was usually just kick it as far as I can, and I was happy that Harry, I think, shepherded it through on the line. So it was a good feeling.
What was the build-up like internally for this game? Ed, there's a lot of pressure on the footy club, a lot of talk about expectation at the start of the season, perhaps not living up to that. And then you got the Bombers before Melbourne and Richmond, I think it is, sorry, the Bulldogs and Richmond in the next couple of weeks. What were the challenges you were facing, and what were the conversations being had in the four walls last week?
No, we had a really good week. Yeah, I think reviewing the games we've played this year, we haven't played our best footy. And I think what I've been proud of as a group is we've still been able to hang in there. And I know that an honourable loss is not what you want, but at least we're not getting blown out. And we're having these 15 to 20 minute periods, I think, where opposition were really taking control. And then we probably weren't moving the ball the way we'd like. And, so we've talked about ways that we can remedy that during the week, and what happens if another team gets a run on. And that's what I thought on the weekend. It was a really good effort considering how we started, which was poor, and we're able to get back in the game.
Ed, Jimmy Bartel here. Well done on your own game, and you're one of the great runners in our game. You just keep running and running, but you've got a teammate there who we described as a Kelpie pup in Sammy Walsh. What's he like at training? Is he just relentless at training as well?
Yeah. He's very motivating to train and play with. I've loved it since Sam's come to the club, and there's no secret. He trains super hard. He attacks each drill to try and be the best he can in that drill, and and he's great to compete against the training. He makes everyone else better. So he's playing some awesome footy at the moment. He's got that confidence. You can see he's kind of holding onto the ball and waiting to shrug a tackle and release his teammates. So it's great to see him doing so well.
Your role yesterday, you went head-to-head with Zach Merritt, if I'm right, but it was important that you kept getting on the end of the footy yourself.
Yeah, I think with Zach, he's such a great player for us and kind of sets him up. He runs those corridor kind of patterns and gets back deep to help him out, a bit of a quarterback style. So he kind of, second quarter, he was getting a bit of the ball, and so I had to tighten up. He usually play against Zach, so I enjoy those battles when we go against Essendon. And then my game's always been off the back of doing solid defensive work, and then usually the ball kind of lands in your area if you can nail that as a starting point, and that's helped me in the past. I was happy to get onto a few.
Ed, with Carlton this year, it seems to be that you respond when there's a lot of pressure on you guys. That's a great sign because it knows that you're still obviously completely engaged as a team. But why does it need to happen? Why do you feel like pressure needs to come onto the club for you to have a response like yesterday?
It's a great question. Because it's one thing that you are really proud of, to run out with a group of guys that performs under pressure, but then how do you create that each week for yourselves? I think it's a matter of players understanding, how to put themselves on edge. And because going out, I think, and playing, AFL week to week, the competition's so tough, you've got to find a bit of an extra edge. And I think players are still learning that, just playing your strengths not good enough. You've got to come out of yourselves and really play on the line to beat strong opposition. So I think that's a habit. It's not fully ingrained yet. We're getting closer on the weekend. We saw some great steps towards that. We still haven't really been blown out. I know that, media and maybe other teams think they've gotten a hold of us, but I think we're still being in games we've played this year, so I've got great confidence that there's a lot of good footy to come from our footy club.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.